Join the Pop Life Podcast conversation. Follow us on Twitter at the Pop Life Podcast. Find us on iTunes at the Pop Life Podcast. Be sure to rate us, please. And find us on SoundCloud and share and like and subscribe. Thanks.
Welcome to the Pop Life Podcast, coming to you from the Crosby Collective Studio. Starring your hosts, Jeffrey Sledge, Naima Cochran, and Sean Young. If it's top of mind in pop culture, it's up for discussion. Thank you for joining us this week. The Pop Life begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right, Pop Life Podcast. Today is, the 23rd?
No. I don't know if I even know. Hold on. Don't nobody know no more. 24th.
24th, okay. I was trying to, I mean, under normal circumstances, which obviously these is as far away from normal as possible,
you still wouldn't know.
I wouldn't know anyway. But I might have known it because my man's, I'm not even excited now, but Jesus, man. My man's dropping an album finally after about 3 years on Friday. Party Next Door.
Oh, but, I mean,
yeah, but you know, after with all this, it's like.
I mean, it still might listen the weekend.
No, I'm going to listen to it. You know what I mean?
The Weeknd, I think, caught a lick. Like, he was the one that had all kinds of stuff because people in the house to listen. You know what I mean? So it's like.
Same with Uzi.
Yeah.
Uzi was number one, I think, at least 2 weeks in a row, maybe three. Definitely two.
So it's actually not a bad time to release music.
It's not, because it's a lack of options. It's either you listening to stuff or you watching stuff, or that's kind of, you know, you're reading or something like that. But as far as outdoor activities, obviously, it's not much going on. So, you know, I'm a try, you know, but usually a party album, like, I'd get geeked up. I'd be like, I'm going to walk this shit in the gym. I'm going to, like, you know, be riding my bike to Central Park. I'm going to blast this shit. Like, all that's dead. I mean, riding a bike is still, ago, but I don't know, even just riding a bike now, although that's not on the list of things you can't do. I don't know, man. The news has got me the news has got me so scary. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like am I breathing in some shit? I don't know. And you know, I've been riding, but I ain't been doing the rides that I usually would do. You know what I'm saying? I just kind of ride uptown in the neighborhood. I'll maybe ride down to Harlem and back, but like the whole park thing. I don't know, man. Shit's just fucked up.
I think they about to fuck around and close the parks anyway because people don't know how to act. I don't know about Central Park, but I know they're talking about closing
the playgrounds.
Playgrounds, yeah.
Yeah. So I think, did you send that to us?
I'm not sure. I don't think so.
Yeah. So somebody sent something to me about that on today.
Well, you might have just seen it. It's on New York One. I don't know if you keep that on.
Maybe that's what it was. That's what it was. New York One. Yeah. Because they said that because kids, you know, people are bringing their kids. You know, obviously there's no school, so people are bringing their kids to the park, and kids is out there running around playing like it's a regular, you know, Saturday afternoon.
Right.
Not no social distancing.
And these Dominicans gonna start getting them birthday parties popping out there.
You know what I'm saying? And because of everything going on, there's no cleaning crews, so the park's also filthy. You know what I mean? Like there's people throwing garbage on the ground, blah blah blah. Blah. There's nobody sanitizing.
Well, there's cleaning crews. They just can't keep up with the demands. Because I think those people are part of essential services, but they can't keep up with the demands to keep the park sanitized or to sanitize every New York playground. Like, that's almost impossible.
It's literally impossible.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, like you said, this weather about to break and, you know, cats are going to be all on the FDR and all that lit with the what's it called? The Kinsey?
What?
What's it called when a girl turns 16?
15. Quinceañera.
Quinceañeras, yeah, all that's gonna be lit, and you know what's gonna be really interesting, and I haven't heard much chatter about it yet, but it's coming up soon, is Easter, because there is, like, the Vatican has shut down Easter services, so there's nothing, and churches are closed.
Easter's gonna be on the ground.
Easter's gonna be in them parks.
No, Easter's gonna be, everybody gonna have to get their fits off on the ground.
Yeah, and the gram.
And the fits is getting off, my nigga. Oh, they are going to happen.
Halloween.
Listen. Somebody going to have their baby dressed in a 7-button orange turban suit and some white shoes, nigga. Y'all are going to see this.
Yeah, exactly. With a hat. I've been saving it all week to get get this made. Just put my last layaway payment in. So, yeah, man, it's going to. Man. So, obviously, we're in the middle of the, I mean, I, if really the worst crisis in the history of this planet.
No, in the century. It's not in the history.
Well, what was worse?
The flu plague of 1918.
I thought this had clipped that, the flu, the 1918 one.
I don't think so. I might be wrong, but I don't think so. But I feel like the bubonic plague, like I feel like plagues where there were literally bodies in the street are worse than what we're going through right now. Like I feel like, you know, our conditions, even though hospitals are going to be full in a minute, the fact that this is happening in modern times, even though there may be more people infected, the conditions make for less overall impact. I mean, think about it. There have been plagues where people literally, there were just bodies in the street. We're not there.
Yeah, true.
We're
true,
not true. There.
But this is.
But definitely,
this is awful.
Yeah, it's a once in a century thing. It's the biggest global crisis any of us have seen or will ever see in our lifetimes.
Hopefully.
And I think, but you know, there's a couple things. The first thing is, I feel like it's almost a little necessary because I've said this with Trump. The problem with living in an advanced society is that you don't realize how many really kind of flimsy protections are keeping you in a certain.
It's a house of cards, literally.
It's completely a house of cards, but you feel like you're untouchable. Like science and math are predictable. Like that's what they do. Like they predict the future based on, not predict the future, but they tell us what's going to happen based on what has happened. Like they do patterns and
algorithms.
Yeah, and literally, it's like if you've had like this. The example I used on I think on Twitter was, if you've had this like world-class if you grew up in this super secure place with a world-class security system and guards and all this other stuff, and nobody was able to touch you, and your security system is saying there's something in your house, but you don't see it, so you're like, the security system is bugging. Yeah. No, like there's something in your, like some shit is going wrong. The fact that people are poo-pooing, like medical professionals and scientists and epidemiologists.
Still, though.
Like, this is literally what they do. And y'all are like, nah. And seeing too many movies about it have made people forget that, like, this shit actually happens. Yeah. Like, for real? You know, there are a whole bunch of post-apocalyptic movies because the prediction is that eventually we'll be there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, all of this shit comes from real places. So, it's frustrating to see people being like, oh, it can't be that bad. Like, even now, people are on some, like, how bad could it be shit? And it's like, collapse of society, collapse of the economy.
Yeah, like nigga, like, people are predicting the unemployment rate to be 25 to 30%.
Yeah, that's what
in like a couple months. It ain't even, that's a horrible percent. That's a, like you said, a society ending percentage, any way you look at it. But when it comes that fast, like in a literally like, this time last month, right, niggas is going to work. And niggas is going to the movies, and niggas is going to the restaurants,
like,
and niggas is traveling. It's like two weeks ago.
This whole thing is 2 weeks. Which is crazy. I mean, the other thing is, on the flip side, I see people who are like, it's about to be the Hunger Games. No, it's not. If we can chill, right? Like, I actually think what we're doing is slowing down all the harm to the environment, and it's going to give some people some reality checks that will keep us to getting to like dystopian status really like as fast.
It's actually making the environment in some cases better because it's the canals in Venice are clean. The oceans are cleaning up.
Yeah.
You know, the air is cleanly because we're not, the human virus of the planet is not destroying shit.
And our penchant for needing, cause that really is what the problem is here. Not just Americans, humans, especially humans in advanced first world countries, have become so spoiled by immediacy and convenience that anything where you tell them they have to wait or stop or like you can't do and get what you want immediately when you want it is like all of a sudden you're infringing upon their civil liberties. You know what I mean? Because that's what everybody's doing, right? They're just like, you can't tell me to stay in my house. Yes, the fuck we can't stay in your house.
Yeah.
It's for the good of society. We are not used to having to do things for the good of the whole. It's not a communal concept.
Niggas don't even be doing shit for the good of their house.
Exactly.
like niggas are awful. Just in general.
Yeah.
Like how many people get sick and don't even quarantine in their crib? Like, what? Like, exactly. Okay, I'm a not drink the juice. Niggas exactly. Niggas are still backwashing the OJ. Like,
word. And the kid with the kids coming right behind them.
Yeah, like, come on. What we're asking for is rational behavior from
irrational people,
but also people who are very limited in the things that they can control. And even when that control is just a mirage, right? Like, it's just the mirage of control. They want to feel like they have it.
Yeah.
And that's why they, the scientists can predict all of those things and they are going to be correct, except it's going to be very difficult if those numbers don't dwindle at a certain point. Right. Like it becomes a hard sell because now it's about sociology. Right. It's about just people needing and having this innate desire to be social. And even when that social interaction is them being the grumpy dude on the bus or, walking in the street, like they're going to want to do that, especially if they feel like, OK, we've done this. We've listened, and this isn't getting any better.
So fuck it.
So that's what they were. So I saw a couple of reports where they was like, obviously it's going to happen. People just have to be patient. But it is a very dangerous thing because if that curve doesn't slant quickly and effectively, then you're gonna have people saying, "Well, what the fuck did we do all of this for?" And fuck it, I'm out. And I'm going to do whatever I want to do now.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been outside.
I'm going to do what I want to do.
Exactly. Yeah. I've been out. And, you see people, people still got to go to the supermarket. People still got to go to, do their basic essentials.
Yeah.
Banking and shit like that. And you see a lot of people, one guy's, buying chicken and he's dressed like he's in a fucking apocalyptic movie, right?
Yeah, like a hazmat suit on.
And it's just like, I mean, I get it. I mean, I guess, my nigga, like...
I seen a nigga with a hazmat suit and the hat and the gloves and all that shit riding his bike down 125th Street.
That's a lot.
I don't know where this nigga's going and where he stole the hazmat suit from.
And so you got that extreme. You got the other extreme. It's going to be very difficult because people are, particularly Americans, are used to doing something. Everything is scheduled. Yeah. Everything is calendared. There is no idle time. There is no idle time for us as a whole, right? Like, we know that, right? Like, doesn't France take like fucking 2 months off and they just shut the country down and and they go on holiday?
France or Spain.
Spain
does the I think it was called. Why am I blanking on the thing? What's it called? Nah. Spain does the thing where they shut down and every day, like in the middle of the day. What's it called? A siesta. Yes.
Come on, niggas in America is used to eating lunch at their desk for 30 minutes.
Yep.
People don't even take their PTO. They trying to sell it. They're trying to switch over days. They're trying to cash out. They ain't making enough during the year. All sorts of shit. So I just think that the culture of America is very anti sit still. It's just so I think
to go on top of your point, I agree with that 1,000%. And then you can multiply that by whatever with black people. Because we really don't take no time off. It's like you tell somebody you're taking vacation, niggas is like, word?
They think you lazy.
Like, oh, damn, nigga, you took some days off. You ain't going to work yesterday? Like, what's up? Like, it's like you get chastised because you wanted to take a little time off and do whatever.
Well, I was also going to say the populations that are having problems sitting still, or at least up until recently, were the boomers because they want to be on the go and because they think they're invincible. Mm-hmm. And the millennials and younger because they don't take it seriously. And at first I was annoyed. I mean, the Gen Xers, we're the generation who were latchkey kids and a bunch of us were only kids. So sitting in the house and entertaining ourselves is not a big deal. But I think that for those who grew up with social media and posting from everywhere, like going to places for really
to stunt for the gram,
to post from that place, right? Like they don't even know how to be in places without documenting it. I think that combination plus the fact that a lot of people 35 and under, or at least 30 and under, they've grown up, their entire careers have been in open work plans with companies that like force this whole team. We're a team, we're a family, mm-hmm. we socialize, we do everything together kind of spirit on them. And a bunch of them have roommates. So they really don't know how to do things individually. Like it's not a concept they're familiar with. So I think it's a struggle. But also I think that like there's a thought of, what is my life if I'm not doing something that I can post about?
Exactly.
Like, what am I supposed to be doing right
now? It's like I don't exist. And even and to that point, even the whole, you know, I still see them now, but definitely earlier, the first, I guess, week or so of this, you saw so many posts of people basically saying, like, although you're in the house, be working on something and be doing something and be creative work on your business and get that business plan off the ground. Yeah, it's like, nigga, like, what are y'all talking about? Like, yo, it's literally a pandemic guy. And I'm not saying, though, don't try to make some use of the idle time. It's not what I'm saying. But, like, it was almost like they were saying, like, if you're just sitting around, you're playing yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I have a very particular feeling about those sorts of folks. But
Horizon grind.
I sleep when I'm dead.
You know, I got five LLCs, nigga. Yeah. You ain't made them. You made $300 off each of them LLCs.
Word.
Okay.
Yeah, word. And you scam somebody for that.
Yeah, that's right. So, but whatever, right? Like, if whatever floats your boat. But I think it is really important for people to understand, and what I've found, and I've said this before, I think on the show, that I don't feel a lack of engagement with people. Like, we're working remotely and people are still working and people are still engaged. And I mean, listen, you know, obviously nobody's trying to have fucking 5 p.m. conference calls, right?
Yeah.
But there's still a level of, hey, you know, we're all trying to figure this out. No one has the blueprint here. No one has the, you know, one of the things, man, that I found, you know, very interesting, man, was like, you know, and I guess we'll get into this too, was just how there's so many.
Is that just me?
That might've been just you. Jeff, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there might have been, like, so one of the things that we really realized, and I think now you said this earlier, but, like, the ecosystem of the economy is so woven together.
Yeah.
Like, that shit is so, I don't think that this administration, I mean, again, because they're so far removed from being in an average Joe position or being next to an average Joe, that they really don't have a clear understanding of just how all of this kind of works hand in hand. Like it doesn't, it's not just one thing. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, you look at these restaurants, man, these restaurants, you know, they're not all big restaurants. And some
most of them aren't.
A lot of these places are gonna have to go. You know, we watched a lot of these fucking hoity-toity Manhattan places that, you know, with the noses in the air for most of the time. Yeah, they're doing takeout now. They're doing takeout.
They fucked up. They fucked up right now.
They have to.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so
like you said, the high-end joints, and yo, we was up in Nobu. And then I'm not disrespecting those restaurants. It's like, all that, you know, the bill was $3,000 shit. Yeah, y'all niggas is serving shit in a cardboard box. And I don't even know how many customers you're getting at this point.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, honestly, if that, you know, like that's to me one of the biggest things, man. I mean, it's been, you know, talked about in the news as well. It's like, man, like when, you know, God willing, whenever this is over, the, you know, the ripple effect of all the businesses, and I'm just speaking know, New York, but I'm sure this is in, you know, most cities, but obviously New York is kind of like the epicenter now, well, with cases and stuff. So we're really feeling the brunt of this thing. All the restaurants and just restaurants and delis and the gyms and those kind of all those businesses that are fed via Midtown and Downtown corporate offices, mm-hmm. you know, being shut down. Like those, whenever this dark ass cloud lifts, you're going to go to Midtown. It's going to be just like blocks of dead of retail spaces with for sale signs.
You're going to have, you're also going to have a swoop in very similar to the most recent financial crisis.
Yes.
Which is you had a lot of big bank take little bank.
Yep.
Very literally, right? And so what you're going to see is you're going to see those mid-level spots become the Equinox. You're going to see those mom and pop shops. They're now going to be TGI Friday Express.
Yep.
They're now going to be sort of made into these miniature corporate annexes, because not only is that just going to – well, here's the thing. I mean, and a part of this is the bill, as the bill is being, you know, touted and voted on, is that many of these businesses are going to be the ones who get the access to credit.
Yeah. Right?
Because who's giving credit to a person who was already just barely making it?
Yeah, to Vinny's Pizza. You know what I'm saying? Yeah,
Vinny's Pizza, you know, you're barely running a profit here.
Yeah.
You know, you don't own the building. Your lease is up. We don't know what your income, your alpha. We don't, you know, so yeah, we can't give you a loan.
Yeah. We got to get you out of here.
And again, who knows how any of this is going to play out based on that bill, because we don't know the meat and potatoes of it. We know the bullet points. We know kind of what the outliers are and what the things are that people are standing in and people are standing on, but we don't know who's going to qualify for those loans. And there's going to have to be language in there for people to qualify for those loans.
Exactly. Exactly. You know
what I'm because definitely, free money. Because also what it's going to do is the same way it's going to kill those smaller businesses, it's going to enhance corporate businesses that have been established that actually should have died a natural death. That were already on the ropes, that were teetering.
Yep.
Yes, they were already on the ropes, and now they're going to get access to massive lines of credit. They're going to have
low interest rates on top of it.
Damn near no interest.
Yeah, damn near free.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And listen, we always say, well, you know, the banks paid back. We don't know what the fuck them banks paid back to the government if they paid back anything.
Exactly.
So who knows, you know, what's going to happen with this bill. But this is, you know, been very interesting as we watched the GOP go out. And that's why they were so eager to put a number with a check for every family.
Yeah.
Because they knew that once they did that publicly, that people were going to be on board with that.
Yes.
Because it's free money.
Yes.
And they're not going to see the underlying factors. They're not going to see how this is going to impact their job, because the business that they work for now doesn't get access to credit.
Exactly. Exactly. It's going to be the financial ruin to this shit. Is just going to be brutal. Like, I mean,
I don't even know if it's going to be a financial ruin as much as it's going to be a financial shift again.
Shift. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Like, it's literally going to be taking these assets, because come on, what are we talking about? They're printing money.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They're going to, you know, run a fucking print machine, print some more money, put some more, and there you go. And keep it moving.
Yeah. So now your man, I just saw that he wants everything backing up and running by Easter.
Yeah, because.
But that's because he wants money for his own businesses.
Yeah.
So it's part threat and part like, either way, I'm not going to take the sell, which is why our presidents are not supposed to have corporate interests.
Exactly.
And he's fucking tired of working. Okay, he's
tired
of coming in every day.
And having actual meetings. He can't go play golf. He can't just pick up and fly to Des Moines, Iowa, and, you know, do a jerk off rally. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, he's actually got to come in there and listen to doctors and listen to economists and really listen, even though he ain't listening to nobody, but he's got to be present for shit. He's got to be in front of the press. Like you said, he's tired of actually doing his job. He's like,
Sean, like you were saying that people are going to be like, okay, why are we still doing this? I'm going outside. That's Trump right now. Meanwhile, he's taking this shit seriously for like a week. Like called the pandemic like on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And
you tired already?
Yeah, because this is the kind of guy who, first of all, he's in meetings with people who are far smarter than him. He doesn't have a level of deference. He doesn't understand when he doesn't understand something, right? Like that's his biggest hurdle. It's also why when you look at Governor Cuomo when he's doing his which is a whole nother thing, but when he does his press conferences and you see the screen next to him, there are always graphs and charts and images. And that's because it is widely known that is the only way to get to Trump.
It's got to be pictures.
It has to be a slideshow. He does not retain information. He doesn't read anything. He doesn't read anything.
Like, have y'all seen his notes? When they show his notes, his notes are like, in 38-point font.
Massive,
On his shit, like, because you can tell. Meanwhile, Obama shit used to be, like, on legal pads, mad small, and he harps on the wrong shit. Like, he's still focused on China. Like, you can see where he has crossed out in his own notes, COVID.
Yeah, I saw that,
And written China.
Yeah.
And you notice everyone in the administration, they intentionally call it the China virus. Like, their whole remarks, I watched one of his pressers live because it's all my nerves to take. And I saw how as everyone got up to the podium to speak, he was hovered over their shoulder looking at what they were saying.
Yep.
Because he wanted to make sure that no matter what other messaging they were saying, President Trump has done an excellent job.
He's the best. Yeah, he's
the best. He's been doing everything. He's been taking unprecedented steps. And that's why Dr. Fauci, what's his name?
Fauci
was out of there on Monday. You know why? Because he did an interview this weekend where basically he made his frustrations known. And also, like, now Miller and Kushner are in Trump's ear like, I mean, you can't let this guy run.
Yeah, he's making you look dumb out there.
Yeah,
he's taking too many questions. He's not going with the program.
And guess who's going to take a massive financial hit the longer people are out of work and staying away from home? Jared Kushner and his real estate business, who is a massive residential
slumlord
real estate. Yeah, he's a slumlord. That's basically what he is, right? Mm-hmm. So, and if you if you haven't, you can watch the episode of Dirty Money on him, which I spoke about last week.
Yeah,
and it specifically outlines this. But yes, this is the type of thing that's going to continue to go. That's not to mention the fact that all of his fucking mortgages are backed by Fannie and Freddie. The fucking government backed mortgages.
Yeah. So it's like a whole, you know, scam, really, is what it is. It's a scam. The reason they want people to get back out here is for them. It's not for, you know, anything to do with helping the country. It's like, you know, for them. And then the people on there now talking about, you know, your grandmothers and grandfathers, the grandparents, they got to die for the economy to get. I'm like, yo, these dudes is like, really, I mean, lack of a better term, not that it's surprising, but they really are showing you now in an actual crisis. If you didn't know before, they're showing you who they are, B. They're showing you who they are. If this dude could get on TV yesterday talking about, you know, grandmothers, grandparents could die, you know, just so the financial shit could get back on track. Then what's he saying? What's he really think about blacks, browns, gays, Asians, Jewish people? If he's, come on, bro, they showing you who they are. So it's a damn near like the Nazis is in there. Like, yo, it's just all about us. And any little crumb you get, that's on you. But fuck y'all, you know?
And this is also, he's trying, what he wants to do is, he wants to get back to normalcy because the normalcy will hide his utter incompetence.
Yep.
Right. It will hide the fact that he dropped the ball on this on several occasions.
Yep.
He dismissed this on several occasions. We would not be at this level of economic turmoil if he had acted initially when this was reported.
Yeah, now, January. Now,
dude, there's even reports that this was brought to him in late 2019, that the possibility of this
I believe it 1,000%.
That the possibility of this happening, the possibility of a pandemic, there's this virus going around, whatever, was brought to him as early as that. So he didn't do anything then, and then didn't do anything when we had the first case in January 19th.
He's showing you, but again, it's not even hard to look. He showed you how he gets down because he was calling it a hoax at his last rally. So he showed you like it did come to his attention back then, and he said exactly what he said in the rally. Man, that shit's bullshit. Yeah. I ain't fucking with that shit, man. Fuck out of here. All I'm worried about is this election right now. Fuck that. Whatever. And then even his early comments. So, it's just going to go away like a miracle. It's going to pass. Like, he was like, that's what he was thinking. I'm just worried about this election right now, and that shit will just go away on its own. And now, meanwhile, we're like, you know, shutting cities down, people out of work, people are dying daily.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, had a high school teammate and classmate that I played ball with. He passed away, 43, dude. Like, yeah.
I just heard about Brooklyn Principal today. She was 36.
Yep, I saw that.
She died. Yeah.
Webstar, he's alive, but he has the virus. He went on Instagram today and talked about how he has it. Slim Thug from Houston, he just posted that he has it. Obviously, we talked about Idris Elba last week and Tom Hanks. So it's, it's not discriminating either. You know what I'm saying? It's not like if you got a bunch of money, you good. Right. It don't really matter.
There's no treatment and there's no cure.
Exactly. Right. All you can do is, if you do get it, is hope that your immune system is strong enough to fight it off and, quarantine yourself for at least 2 weeks and just hopefully they'll run through your system and come out the other side.
If you do happen to get it, I don't know if we talked about this here, and I'm sure everybody has seen the messaging, but I don't want to assume what people have seen and read. So I feel like we got to do a little PSA. So if you do, and the likelihood is that most of us will.
Yes.
Even if we're staying indoors now and only going to the store and only doing what we need to do. If we don't get it this round, we may get it in the fall, which is what they're trying to create. They're trying to create waves, right? Mm-hmm. So that everybody doesn't have it all at one time. But if you do get it, do not go to the emergency room.
Yeah.
Do not go to the hospital because they are overwhelmed. At the same token, if you have any other things going on, an upset stomach, some headaches. Like, this is a time where emergency room really has to mean, like, you about to die.
Yeah. You're having a baby or some shit.
Yeah, are overwhelmed. Like, your kid broke their arm. Not your kid just fell down. Your kid broke their arm. You really have to make, this is, like, emergent, like, for real emergency, duck content emergency. So if you think you have it, if you have a fever, and you have a sore throat, do not immediately go to the hospital.
Yeah.
Start treating it. Lots of hydration, room temperature or warm water. I've heard that cold water is not suggested.
Yeah, they say cold water. They say drink warm water, like you said, room temperature. And don't drink too many things with ice in them.
Yeah, so room temperature water, warm water. Hydration helps. A dry mouth, you want to get it out of your mouth and pass the lungs into your stomach as quickly as possible.
For the acid.
For the acid, because it takes hold in your lungs. So if you can wash it past the lungs, so stay hydrated. Yeah.
I went to the market for a minute today, and all the Gatorade is real low now because of the hydration. And they're saying how Gatorade is actually something you should kind of drink pretty regularly to keep yourself hydrated, like you said.
And gargling with salt water or vinegar regularly helps because it is a natural antiseptic. So they say to do that. Basically, you just really need to maintain the throat area, right? Yeah. And then if you do end up with symptoms, like, you kind of got to ride it out the way you would with a cold or
with a bad cold or flu.
Yeah, and just kind of treat yourself. And like you just said, like, hope to get to the other side. Now, once you get to the point where you cannot breathe on your own,
yeah,
that is when you go to the hospital.
Yeah. So let me ask a question. I guess a lighter note, I guess it's a lighter note, but how do we feel this is going to affect all the social activities that come along with summer in America?
This is going to be a very different summer. I'm 100% expecting them to cancel Essence Fest. There is no way you can
have 1,000
people in Ron's.
BET Awards, dead. Done. Not happening.
Well, that shit is a wrap.
That's over.
I think because somebody was saying something about going to their family reunion. I was like, girl, you're not having your family reunion. You're like, what are you talking about?
Ain't going to pass Corona around like the all six to Ed and May.
Grand aunties and uncles. You losing recipes.
Edamame and Otis. Come on now. They can't handle that shit. Mm. Otis already got the sugars. And actually they say sugars are bad. And they actually say diabetes is actually something that makes you susceptible to.
Well, actually anything impacting your immune system makes you susceptible to it, right?
Okay.
Respiratory, particularly because smokers.
You don't have natural antibodies to this.
Yeah, smokers, yeah, exactly. So, like, I'm wondering, like, I mean, stuff even, like, you know, in August, we always have Sunday sermon. And, I think that all that shit is dead. There's just going to be a lot of people, like, I don't know.
I think there will still be open air events because it's closed. It's in closed spaces that carry a higher risk, right?
Yeah.
I think there will still be open air events, but I think that if people want to have them, they're going to have to really be, like, strict crowd capacity measures. And we're looking, because strict crowd capacity measures, and they're going to have to be people in place. Like, if it's an event, a space big enough, like, say, the Great Lawn or something, right?
Yeah.
There are really going to be people in place that are mandating. They may not still be telling us 6 feet by then, but it's definitely not going to be everybody jammed.
On top of each other.
Because we literally cannot go back to that before there's a vaccine. So,
you're right. Afro-punk.
The concerts as we know them are a wrap until there's a vaccine. There may still be things that happen, especially things outdoors, but it's going to be a much more limited event, and you're going to have to be way more spaced out. Like summer states, like I'm thinking about all that.
What I have been trying to do, and I don't know the timing yet, but I have, you know, and I guess this is some real fucking first word problems, I guess, but I have been on Expedia trying to figure out when to book it, because everything is so cheap now. So I'm like, I want to book a trip, or like, do I book it for August? Do I book it for September? You know, now, and pray that things are in a space where we could travel back then, or by then, I don't know. Like, what y'all think?
I don't know. We have Country Cousins' wedding in November. I don't see myself traveling before. Right now,
before it's November.
Right now it's hard for me to imagine trying to make any plans.
That's what I'm saying.
Before then.
That's why I pulled the trigger.
A lot of people are like, well, we could buy a cheap ticket for this time. First of all, right now, other countries that don't have a COVID problem
They're not letting you in, nigga.
Yeah, they don't want us, like, because people are like, well, we can go to a safe country, nigga. We ain't safe for the
safe country.
Like, they looking at us like, don't bring that shit here.
That's what I'm saying. I've been looking at Tulum, and I'm like, shit, Mexico might not let my ass up in there.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you go somewhere, you got to quarantine for 14 days before they even let you go, like, to the hotel and shit.
That's what I'm saying. So, that's like...
Yeah. So, I cannot... Like,
where's Country Cousins' wedding? Is it in September, the country?
October and shit. I'm like, I can't even... I gotta see what we look like in June before
Is Country Cousin wedding in country, or is it a destination?
It's the Caribbean.
It's the Caribbean, yeah. So that's tough. Yeah. I don't know. All right, well, you know, as always, you know, pray for us. We're praying for y'all. Everybody stay safe. Stay in the house. I know it's hard. The weather's starting to break a little bit. Sun is out, you know, but...
Hey, yo, ass in.
Stay in the house and watch some more TV.
There's some great TV.
It is. Let's lighten it up a little bit, man, because I won't be the dreary podcast and shit. First thing. Did you watch? Let's do a little reality. Real Housewives. Did y'all watch?
I didn't.
Yeah. Okay.
You watched that? What'd you think about this episode?
I think Nene has a drinking problem.
Oh, okay. I hadn't really thought about that, but now I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just like, I can see that.
Like, the way she turns, was beyond
the click on and off.
Both last week and this week, it was beyond the normal Nene getting nasty.
Yeah.
Something else. Maybe it wasn't. Something else was going on. I don't know.
I mean, it could be a substance abuse issue as well. Like, wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me at all. I'm not, you know, and allegedly, because I'm not trying to say I don't know anything and I'm like that, but if that came out one day, it wouldn't be like, oh my God. It'd be like, yeah, well.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
You know, that kind of makes sense. What'd you think about Kenya?
I think that Kenya is still like trash. As much as I don't think the stuff with Mark is her fault, like I think we said this last week, like, I think she's disingenuous with her apology shit. And she doesn't want to hear about herself. Honestly, because I think that Margot was really about to try to be real with her.
Yes.
And she got up and walked away.
Yes. And you saw Marlo, when she did walk away, Marlo said to them, I don't know if you remember this, she said the things I said about her mother were awful.
Yeah.
So Marlo was about to apologize to her.
Like, Marlo was literally about to, she didn't even let Marlo get anything out.
Nope, not a word.
Like,
Not a word. Yeah, it was, yeah. Like I said, Marlo, you know, insinuated she was about to apologize for saying those things. Yeah, it's just, you know, at this point, I mean, we say this every season, you know, and I'm sure the ratings are strong, so they're gonna have another one, but it's not funny anymore. It's just like there's a lot of just very damaged people on this show, you know, and I mean damaged in like, you know, upbringing and things that have happened in the past. I'm sure things that we don't even know about. It could be, you know, sexual assault. It could be all kind of things that happened to these women in the past that I don't think any of them have had any substantial level of therapy and stuff like that to kind of work through. So when things happen, it, you know, makes for great TV because they explode and burst and curse each other out and yell and scream. But it's kind of like, and again, you know, me being the fucking armchair psychiatrist, it's like, you know, they say like a lot of people who have trauma, most people have trauma actually, in a lot of ways, unless they have intensive therapy, they never kind of move past that age of maturity wise.
Right.
And so I think a lot of stuff we see with Nene and Kenya specifically.
It's about their
like,
parents.
Yeah, and it's like Nene turns into like a 16-year-old girl. When she gets mad, she's like, that's how high school girls act when they get mad. Fuck you, bitch. Like, she's 52 years old. But she kind of reverts back to that age when maybe with some real traumatic shit happened. And so does Kenya.
Yeah.
Kenya goes with the darts and the And again, because I think Kenya's probably been through a lot of shit. And we know she's been through a lot of shit in life with her mom and being rejected and all that. And so they kind of like, when something bad happens, Kenya and her thing goes one of two ways. Either she goes hard body and those darts, or in the case of Mark, she becomes completely passive.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if she just doesn't respond to anything and she kind of shuts down. And Nene does the same. Either Nene's like, fuck you, bitch, blah, blah, or then she'll get on a reunion and be like,
start crying and being like,
well, I don't want to talk about this. You know, so I think, you know, I hope that didn't ruin anybody's viewing, but it's just not fun anymore, man. You know, it's just not fun. I don't know. But we'll be watching next week. I don't know. They're probably not going to be able to do a reunion.
Oh, I don't know, because I don't know where they were. Well, I don't.
Unless they do them separately, like in different boxes. Yeah. They can't be in the same room.
Andy has corona, so.
Yeah, Andy got the corona anyway, yeah. Now, bro, what I wanted to ask you, were y'all able to do a reunion for New York?
We'll talk offline about it.
Okay. And so, Brothers and Sisters Not Too, so Love and Hip Hop Atlanta started last week.
I still need to watch it.
You haven't watched it yet? Okay. Mm-mm. Okay, now skip past it because I'm the only one who kind of watched it. I'll just wait to kind of catch up. Let's talk about Tiger King.
Whoa, nigga. Whoa.
That is the crazy. It is the single craziest piece of content I've ever seen in my entire fucking life.
And you literally never know what's going to happen next.
Oh, my God. Like, I was watching that shit yesterday. Like, how is more shit happening? Like, what the fuck is happening? Even the producers.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
They stepped in gold because they definitely didn't approach the documentary expecting any of that to happen. They were just sort of eccentric guy. Well, let's back it up. So Tiger King, for those who haven't watched it, is this documentary on Netflix, a 7-part documentary about this guy named Joe Exotic. Joe Exotic is this redneck, gay guy from, I think he's from Oklahoma, from Texas originally.
He lives in Oklahoma. They never specify.
But he lives in Oklahoma, outside of Oklahoma City, and he owned a big cat farm. So it had, you know, tigers and lions and snow leopards and, yeah, all kind of different animals there. And so the documentary kind of starts out because he's this real eccentric character and he dresses crazy and I say he's gay and he's all this kind of stuff rolled into one. He's this alleged country singer. He's just all kind of shit. And then so the documentary is about starts off about him and his eccentricities. And then it also kind of explores the network of these big cat farms, which that there's way more of them than I ever realized. So they talk about a few of them here. They talk about one in Florida owned by this woman. There's one in, where's the other guy from? The guy with the
South Carolina. Head.
South Carolina. Yeah, and there's one like in Indiana. Those are the ones in this particular documentary.
Well, let's be clear. The one in Florida that's owned by Carol is not, technically, it's not a zoo. It's called, and I'm using air quotes here, it's called the sanctuary.
Yeah, sanctuary.
And she's apparently backed by PETA, adding some validity to her organization. But it's not seen as the same thing. When you watch the documentary, there are not very many differences, but it's not seen.
None, really.
Yes.
Yeah, there's really none besides the fact that she's saying it's different. But that's kind of how the documentary starts off. And Joe Exotic has beef with, the woman's name in Florida? Yeah, I'm blanking on her name.
Carolyn? I can't remember.
Yes. So Joe Exotic has beef with her. But then over the 7 episodes, the documentary just goes in literally 40 different
directions. Carol Baskin is her name.
Yeah, Carol Baskin, exactly. The documentary goes in like 40 different directions. It includes alleged murder.
Carol's husband mysteriously disappeared, and no one has been able to find his body in over 25 years.
Yeah, so the rumor is that she killed him and fed him to the tigers.
Yeah, chopped him up, threw him in the yard.
Yeah, and then there's so many things that happen that some things get overlooked, such as Carol, when she met her husband, she was like a runaway. She was like a teenage runaway. Yes. He was like 40-something years old.
I don't believe.
You don't believe that?
I don't believe that story she told about how she met
him.
You believe she was a prostitute?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too. Because it didn't make any sense.
No, it didn't make sense. But this story.
She was walking down the street, girl.
Yeah.
Because this is what we always say when these niggas be having these war stories about the 80s, right? Because who's gonna say no to that story?
Yeah. Who's gonna go against the story?
Who's gonna fact check that story? Well, so the story is, you know, she's walking down the street. You know, she was in a.
Because she had just left her.
Yeah, she was. First husband. She was running out. He tries to pull over. Then he like, she wouldn't get in the car. He double backs and hands her a gun and says, "You can hold the gun on me." And then we just went to a hotel and talked. Okay.
Yeah.
If that makes you sleep at night, and this is no judgment, but if that makes you sleep at night, then God bless. I don't know what to say after that. But that story was definitely suspect.
And then you find out that this guy that she ended up marrying, he married his first wife, who he was still married to, we met Carolyn, when she was only 14.
He was 17.
He was
17, and she was 14. So it's just been a whole... And that's just like a sliver of what happens in this documentary.
But hold on. But then the husband is worth like maybe $20 million, maybe $10 million. Like, yeah. He buried money in New York. He got gold bullions buried in New York.
Yeah.
He, like, had mistresses all over the place. So there's that, and producers didn't even know about that.
Yeah, they didn't even know about that shit. Yeah, yeah. Joe Exotic put the producers up on that story. They didn't know nothing about that at all. They was like, wait, what? The
producers were like, wait, what happened? Exactly. Then Joe Exotic be making music videos with somebody else's voice, even though the songs are kind of high.
The song's actually good. Yeah.
I be like, damn, who produced this?
Exactly. The first thing I said, I was like, why this nigga ain't doing shows?
Why he on tour?
Yeah, like, you go down to the honky tonk and get you some work, bro.
Exactly. Opening up for a good melody, lyrics. Yeah.
Like, so he's done a video about Carol killing her husband and feeding him to the cats.
Feeding to the cats and just. This is just a sliver of
suicide. There's
suicide. Let's just say before we keep going, not we already started, but there's going to be some spoilers. So if y'all haven't watched it, sorry.
But listen, even if y'all haven't watched it,
watch it anyway.
You're not ready.
That clip. When old boy shot himself in the head, I was like, they got footage of this shit. I mean, you don't see the guy shooting himself in the head, but you see the flash of the gun.
I promise you, they have that footage and they didn't show it.
They didn't show it. They got the other angle.
There was enough for them to get the guy's reaction in there. So the first, one of the things that's really dope about this is that this is documentary filmmaking at its finest, because they literally let the story tell itself. They followed the crumbs.
Yeah, they followed the pieces.
They followed the pieces and they let it fall into place. And it's actually one of the rare cases that you watch an unbiased. It's a very objective documentary.
Absolutely, because pretty much everybody at the end comes out looking like shit.
Crazy. No hero. They all look crazy. And so one of the things that I found very interesting, and I think that I've talked to you guys, I've said this before, there's something very predators. They smell a level of desperation, and you can tell. When you looked at those, I'm using air quotes here, those husbands of Joe's, that you can tell that he was being very predatory. Now listen, they were grown ups.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying that they
Yeah, but they were fucked up. They had nowhere to go. Like you said, they were literally picking people up in the bus stop. Like, dude, yo, you want to work?
They straight up and down were addicts. His orbit. They were addicts.
And he knew it was straight.
He preyed on that.
Exactly.
They were addicts with no place to stay. That kid came from California. He had pot nor window.
And 19 years old.
And he was on drugs, right? So it made it a very easy transition for him. But then you also see the other guy, Jeff, sees the desperation in him, in Joe. And then he becomes a predator on him.
Yeah, that was the wild shit. Like, Joe was the victimizer, and he became a victim.
The biggest, yo, man, the easiest way for a con artist to think, to make you buy their con is to make you think that they're the mark. And he made Joe think that he was going to be the mark, and Joe was going to be winning here. He basically took that man Zoo over with a cashier's check for $35,000.
Yep.
Exactly.
Yep.
And a rented Ferrari. Like,
and a rented house.
It was fascinating. Even when you have the other guy, so they're going to build this new zoo.
And he gets this other guy
who has, you know, massive amounts of animals and things like that. To come in to be his 50-50 partner, and you look up, and this guy's literally trying to move 40 acres of fucking earth with a bobcat.
Yeah, he's actually on a bulldozer, like you said.
No, nigga, not even a real bulldozer. Yeah, yeah. That's a bobcat, nigga. That's like, the bobcat is the shit that, like, your landscaper uses when they're putting in trees in the back. That's not a big enough machine to move earth. Like, they're literally replanting earth, dude. Like, and he's out there by himself. I was fascinated by this shit.
In the heat of Florida, while Joe's walking, Jeff's walking around with a do-rag on and a baseball hat.
Motherfucker in a Bobcat 16 hours a day with a monkey on his neck. Talking about
with literally a monkey on his neck.
What the fuck is going on out here?
the shit was just...
It was like one big ad for Florida Man. Even though they were in Oklahoma, it was one big-ass Florida Man ad.
Every time I would just keep saying, these are Trump voters. Every last one of these are Trump voters. These are the people that Trump knows are going to rock out with him no matter what
he says or does. Yo, man, the levels of narcissism, the predatory behavior by all of them. Like, by all of them. This wasn't, you know, Carol is in that boat as well. That very eerie giggle she had.
Carol's running the whole... Oh, my God. And Carol's running the whole farm and not paying anyone.
That's my point.
No, Carol was talking about this shit is the scam.
The period. T-shirts.
No, Carol has tiers of volunteerism.
Word.
Where you get these different badge levels like it's karate. And you have to be there, like, she was like, you got to be here like 3 years before you're even on my radar. Meanwhile, she's a millionaire, a multimillionaire.
And ain't literally is not paying anybody a dime.
And dude, that's beside the fact that she was saying that she was getting checks through Facebook and YouTube, like all the social media shit. She's getting checks for that. And this is all PETA, dude. PETA is like a partner with her. This is wild to me.
Yep. Wild. Wow. Like, the shit, it's just a fascinating documentary. Like, it's literally got everything. It's got drama. It's got comedy. It's got sad shit. It's got, you know, horrific shit. It's got sex. It's got drugs. It's literally anything you could think of. It's got the animals. We didn't even talk about the animals and how they were being treated, and we didn't even get into all that. How you find out that they're shooting animals and burying them in the yard. Like, it's just, this shit was just, it's just an amazing documentary. If you haven't seen it, especially with all this free time, I'm telling you, please watch it. You will blow through these seven parts in a day because it's so much going on. It's like, I told somebody, it's like watching a Tyler Perry movie, except it's real. Like, the little movie is like, man, this shit couldn't really happen. But no, it actually really happened.
It's the whole movie is basically white people are crazy.
Literally, white people's crazy. Gotta mention the Tokyo Olympics are canceled now until 2021, based on the coronavirus, if that even happens. So, like we said earlier, it's gonna be a whole bunch of events, big events. Like, I know the Kentucky Derby is moved as of now to, I think, September, October, but I don't think that's gonna work either. The NBA season looks like it's pretty much dead, unless they go in the fall. I don't know what's going to happen with football. I don't know, baseball's all these huge kind of markers of spring and summer are going away, with no kind of return date in sight. Shit is crazy. Did y'all keep up with this thing with Kim Kardashian and Taylor Swift?
No idea what. I just know that some more came out about Kanye's conversation with Taylor that they were beefing about
years ago
at this point, that apparently proves that Kanye and Kim were lying, but they are the absolute last people I care about right now.
Yeah. But it came out that it came out that they were absolutely lying because somebody leaked the full conversations they had, and then Kim got on Twitter yesterday still trying to defend this shit. It's like, shorty, like, you know, again, it doesn't mean anything in today's world because it doesn't matter. But it's like, shorty, like, you're dead wrong. Like, just be quiet and own it. But, you know, this new season of the Keeping Up with the Kardashians is coming on.
I can't believe that show is still on.
Still on. I think it's coming on, like, maybe, like, this weekend? Like, really soon? So,
probably.
Hence the reason that they're doing all this, stuff.
You know, Kim, you know, you're 40. You're
with, like, four kids.
Yeah, like, what are we, you know, still trying to defend this? It's like, you know, I don't know, man. I didn't keep up with it the first go around because I always think that your man is a stunt queen, and I think she's
no question.
She's a wife who's going to run through the brick wall with her husband, don't matter what he do, don't matter what he say. You know, nothing he's ever, you know, going to do or say is going to be wrong in her eyes, and she's going to try to defend it. You know, she's trying to stand on technicalities.
Yeah.
And, you know, no, you know, it was
but
all
sometimes
bullshit.
She can just not say anything.
Yeah.
Sometimes she can just not say anything.
I mean,
like,
that's
she just not said.
That's true. She could have, except she's quarantined with that nigga, and I know he's unbearable. If that nigga's unbearable on a regular day. So I know.
Word.
Sunday services. Actually, she's probably trying to stop him from going out and doing a Sunday service. Like, she's like, Kanye, you can't. Like, I saw that Jared Leto has a private island and is having motherfuckers come to the private island. And I was like, Kanye.
Nah, I'm good on that.
And be like, we need to go to Wyoming or wherever.
Yeah, exactly. On that. Yeah, you keep that.
Yeah, I'm good on that. Keep that shit to yourself. One of the things I've been doing, man, I guess is to get my sports picks. I've just been watching a lot of basketball on YouTube.
Classics,
Yeah, classics and shit. I watched the Five Slamma Jamma doc again. And I've been watching a ton of LeBron footage. And I got to say, man, I don't know if he's better than Mike. He right there, bro. Like, he's like 1B. Like, you really start watching the footage and stuff, you're like, damn, this nigga's an animal, you know? Like, that's interesting to me. Like, I've been seeing, like, some old Michael Jackson clips pop up on Twitter in the past few days. Like, kind of people, I guess, looking backwards at some shit, you know, like, reminding themselves of, I've seen some old Prince stuff popping up, you know, like, more than regularly, I think people have been kind of posting stuff.
But I also think it's good because we consume.
No, it's great.
We consume things and move. Like, there are some habits we're going to pick up or revert back to during this time that I think are going to be good to hold on to. And one of those things is not cycling through shit so quickly.
Yes.
Like, just actually slowing down for a minute and consuming and living with things.
Yes, yes, yes. And like I said, you watch some of the. You know, again, you know, it's not like Michael died like 45 years ago and LeBron is obviously still playing. Just as two examples, there's, I watched a Usain Bolt documentary on Netflix as well. So I've been kind of doing stuff like that. And just like you see these guys, like you said, and, you know, you cycle through so quickly. And like, especially with somebody like Bolt, who's only pops up on our radar every 4 years. So you kind of like forget, you know, so you watch some of this stuff. Or even like watching, you know, Unsung Now, you know, we always watch that anyway. But it's just kind of like. You know, some real, you know, we kind of like are shortchanging a lot of these real talented people out here, you know, and so it's good to see that. Have y'all kept up with Unsung?
Yeah.
Last one I watched, I started to watch Sky, and then I turned it off halfway through. What was the last? What was this week?
The latest one was
Shannon.
Shannon.
I don't even think I know who that is.
Yeah, give me the night. Yeah. Shannon one, you know, was kind of, I don't say close to my heart, but Shannon was really interesting to me because, and I don't know her at all, but I wasn't around the music business when she started, because she started in like 82, 83, I guess, when she had those records, but just kind of like watching what she was saying about how those labels didn't pay her and, kind of jerked her around and everything. It was just very reminiscent of what also happened. That run, there was a lot of small labels like that in the 80s who were doing like the kind of dance music. And even the, you know, the.
They were basically paying people as like work for hire, right?
Yeah, paying people as work for hire. Even if you got an advance, it was shorts, you know? And of course, that contract definitely took all your publishing. And so Shannon said she got a check for $34,000, I think, maybe upon the second single, maybe when the album came out.
Yeah, it was like the second single, I think.
Yeah, and she said she never got another dime again. And I don't know what the tallies are, but I promise you, Give Me the Night and Let the Music Play sold millions.
Oh, Let the Music Play 100%.
Millions, plus back then. And this was I could let it go now because it's old, but back then, one of the huge scams in the music business was the compilations.
Right.
So all around the world, they would do these compilations like, you know, Dance, Dance This, or Now One, Now Two, Now Three. Those are some of the bigger ones. But there was a whole bunch of them in each territory, Germany, France, you know, the Netherlands, whatever. They all did these dance compilations where they were licensed records from the labels here. And, you know, other songs from around the world, but a lot of records got licensed from America. But those, that money just went back to the label. The artist didn't see a fucking dime because there was no way to really account. So I'm saying that to say, ain't no telling how much money they made off Let the Music Play from just from that type of stuff. Besides the sales of it, and they made millions of dollars off that song. So for her to get a check of $34K was like, and she said to this day she's never seen another check from the label since then. Which obviously now the label, and then it was just slick thing to do with labels. At a certain point, then the labels just disband, then they just go away. So who are you suing? You know. So it was just interesting because that happened again when rap started. It was the same thing. All these little small labels, I'm signing this. It was the same thing. It was taking niggas publishing, a nigga catch a hit, they sell gobs and millions of records, and the artist saw it 10 cents. So, I, you know.
Yeah.
But needless to say, Unsung has been, it's been good this year because they kind of went to some, you know, artists that we kind of forgot about. Like, I forgot about Sky, kind of, you know?
I didn't because I listened.
Right.
Yeah. But I love Sky. I love Sky. I thought they were the shit.
That's what Unsung was good for in the beginning. It really was like either obscure or like whatever happened to.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they're trying to get back to that. Because like we said, for a minute, it wasn't really Unsung. It was just more like, oh, nigga, you ain't been around for a minute.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was like, like there's Unsung, and then there's just, you ain't make no more hits. Like they're not the same thing.
They're not the same thing.
Like the intro statement is unparalleled, unrivaled. Christopher Williams is not unparalleled and unrivaled.
Exactly.
You know.
Piece the sky because they still sound great.
First of all, I didn't know they were from Brooklyn.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, I knew that.
Like they from like the hood. I didn't know that. So once they, you know, they do the beginning, I was like, oh shit, they from LG. They from
around the way.
East New York. He went to Thomas Jefferson. Okay, he probably know my cousins. Yeah. And them. They around the same age, you know. And then you start.
Not literally.
No, dead serious. You start watching it and then you and like I've always said, man, one of the things that you recognize is that groups of a certain period had musicians because music in schools was a real thing, right? Like, so this is all they did.
Say again, bro, you froze up.
Yeah, I was saying that music in schools during that, that was a big thing. That's why you see those bands, literally why you see the Last of the Mohicans is like the fucking, the Mint Conditions of the world and those sorts of bands because right after that late '80s,
they took it out of school.
Yes, yeah. Right after that late '80s era is when they started disbanding all of that shit.
Mm-hmm.
I started playing violin because of music in school.
Mm-hmm.
And being in orchestra in school, and almost all my friends, like I mean, most schools still have marching bands, but almost all of my friends at least tried an instrument at some point.
Yeah, everybody tried. And some people got better than others, but everybody of a certain era played an instrument. Like you said, it's like some people kept stuck with it, some people let it go. But everybody's like, you know,
all had bands. Like my daddy was in a band. All his brothers were in a band. Like, you know, you were either in a band or you were in a singing group. Like, it's what you did.
It's what you did. Yeah, it's what you did. Like, it's like cats, like how cats rap now.
Like, we don't even have talent shows no more. We don't have talent shows.
No.
Like, we can bring talent shows.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like you said, it's like how cats rap now. That's what the band was then. Everybody had a band or a singing group. And to that point, that's why, and I wasn't surprised, but that's why the three women in Sky who are sisters, they're performing now as the Ladies of Sky. They showed them performing. I think it was like maybe like Wingate Park or something.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the summer parks in the city.
Yeah, it was one of the summer park series. Yeah, because they had the sign back there, the summer stage thing. It was either Wingate or Roy Wilkins.
ain't but about three of them.
Exactly. But they sounded great because you really had to know how to sing. Like you couldn't fuck around back then. You really had to know how to blow and harmonize and And, you know, it was real. So, again, them being now, you know,
because that was also
grandmothers, they could really still sing because it's what they, plus they're sisters.
That's also before you had a bunch of production tricks in the studio, right?
Yeah, like, you had to sing.
Kind of had, and
well, that's literally a part of what they said. They said, so yeah. come like that second album, not the second album, because they had a couple. So I think when they did the
like the third album,
Start of Romance. So when they did the Start of Romance album, it was very much like them in the studio. The main guy, I can't remember his name. His name is escaping me right now.
It was Randy Mullen, Solomon Roberts.
Yeah, Solomon. So Solomon, they basically didn't have the other musicians. It was just like him in there, and they were basically doing using synthesizers, using drum machines.
Yep.
And the ladies were kind of like, what the fuck is this? You know what I'm saying? They really...
Yeah, what is this shit? Yeah.
They didn't really take to it. And that was, you know, look, man, every so often, man, that happens. You know, things will kind of pass you by. The sound will kind of pass you by. And, you know, there was some rough road that, you know, 88 to like, you know, shit, 88 to 98, maybe 2000 period, was really rough for those acts that were like for real singers and for real musicians.
And musicians. Because people were programming shit.
Exactly. And that also is kind of like, even now it's different, but the same in some ways. That kind of is also like an Atlantic thing in that they're all about like having the tracks and stuff kind of almost like, in a lot of cases, almost like ready for you as the artist. You go in and just, we already got it done. You just sing it. Like, I remember reading a story about, because that's how Niall and Bernard worked, the guys from Chic who produced Mr. Sledge and Donnie Ross and all that. That's how they worked. They would go in and basically, because they had the group Chic, right? So they had singers in Chic. So they would go in and basically make the whole song. So when Sister Sledge, for example, came in and sung We Are Family, the song was done.
They were delaying vocals.
Even the vocals were done. You know what I'm saying? But they just did the vocals again.
They just dubbed the vocals.
Yeah, they just dubbed the vocals. And a lot of, if you really listen underneath, some of the vocals from the Chic girls are still up under there. So Kathy obviously is a lead singer, so she did her part. But like some of the other stuff was kind of layered up underneath. They would be, and so I remember reading a story about what they did that with Diana Ross. And she was like, fuck are you talking about, nigga? They was like, not Diana, we don't. Diana would come in and like lay the lead. And they'd be like, all right, Diana, we good, you can go. And she's like, nigga, what the fuck are you talking about?
Easy.
And so, but then she left and trusted them. And when she came back, they had like Upside Down and she was like, oh shit. Like, but that's how they work. Like, that's kind of like an Atlantic thing. Like, we go in the studio, we make the shit, okay, you sing it, and then we're putting it out. And that's kind of what they were doing with Sky, like Sean said. And they, you know, was kind of like, what are y'all doing? Why are y'all not letting us kind of be involved with the creative process? But anyway, yeah. So I, you know, yeah, do yourself a favor and dig into some of these old videos and stuff like that of some of these amazing classic artists that we have, because you know you'll be kind of surprised. I think some of the youngins will definitely be surprised, like how like Michael Jackson knew how to tap dance. You know what I'm saying? Like these niggas was on a whole. You at that point to be an entertainer, you had to literally know how to do everything. Yeah, it's no. Everything. Do everything, bro.
Nigga, I just found out. I looked at the Miles Davis documentary. I can't remember what.
I gotta watch that. I heard it's great.
It's excellent.
I totally didn't know that Miles was an artist. Like I didn't. I had no
painter.
Idea. Yeah, yo, dude, his shit. I couldn't. You know, one, I couldn't find anything. But the stuff that I was finding, like his shit is going for thousands of dollars. Obviously, right? Because it's my and it was good. It was good work. It wasn't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, high quality.
I also didn't know, this is a whole separate thing. I didn't know Miles came from money.
You didn't know what now?
Miles came from money.
Yeah. He's from St. Louis, right? St. Louis nigga?
Yeah.
He grew up with little changes. Well, his family had little changes in their pocket.
A lot of
changes. Yeah. Did y'all watch, I haven't watched yet, but did y'all watch the Madam C.J. Walker doc?
Not a doc.
I made a mistake.
Inspired by. It's a limited series inspired by, because it is very heavily fictionalized.
Did you watch it yet?
Not yet. Okay. I'm hearing mixed reviews.
Me too. I'm hearing Tiffany Haddish is a weak link. But
I want Tiffany to work on her craft. because I want to root for her, and I'm finding it harder and harder to do so because I feel like she's working hard but not smart. I want her to grow, and I don't think she's grown.
Yeah, she's kind of doing the Kevin Hart. She's playing the same character in every movie.
Kevin works hard, but Kevin, not that Tiffany didn't put in a lot of time, but Kevin spent a lot of time becoming Kevin, right? Kevin also is at the point where he has creative control over what he does and doesn't do. I don't see Tiffany getting there anytime soon unless she stretches a little bit.
Yeah, so, she still hasn't been the lead in any movie.
Yeah, because even her comedy is not as tight as Kevin's comedy. It's like she's got some work to do. She's got some work
definitely
to do.
Definitely does. And stop just doing a she ready and a nay nay.
Like, and nay nay, yeah.
You've been doing this for 10 years now. Let it go. We're going to end on a nice up note and talk about our friend Derek Jones, D-Nice, who just in like a week.
Who is unaffordable for any of us ever again in life.
And yeah, it's over. It's over. Who put on a what's it called? Homeschool?
So he branded it. So like last Tuesday, Wednesday was the first day he did it. He branded it homeschooling.
Yes.
For like, you know, because we're all homeschooled. But then when you would get in, he'd be like, okay, we're in club quarantine.
Club quarantine, yes.
Caught on, but the name, he branded his little live party homeschool.
And we mentioned it on the show last week because you had clicked on it. He had just started. We were ending the show.
I was ending the show. Everybody in this bitch, yeah. Like Andre, because I was texting Jeff like, yo.
Yeah, get on here. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, then we jumped on. So the first day, and I don't even remember how many viewers he had that first night. I mean, it was a good amount, but it wasn't crazy.
The first two nights, it was in the hundreds.
Yeah, it was good. It was cool. It was like, oh shit, we in here, you know?
Right.
Old kind of party people from the New York record business era. Yeah. You know, were in there
from the party era.
Yeah, from the party era, and then by I guess like day three or four, it just started to explode.
Well, it was Saturday.
It was Saturday night. It was Saturday exactly.
It was Saturday day. It started at 5. So Saturday started at 5, and I don't know if it was because it was the, I feel like it was because it was the first weekend day, even though I know our week isn't a regular week anymore.
But still, it was a Saturday. Yeah. Niggas had nothing
Saturday
to do.
Afternoon. And I clicked in at 5:30. It started at 5. I clicked in at 5:30. By then, it was already at 9,000 people. And I remember being overwhelmed that it was 9,000 people.
Yeah, exactly.
So I had actually posted it earlier on my Instagram, and I sent an e-blast out to my Music Sermon folks and promoted it earlier just because I thought it's just so much fun. The thing about Derek, and I'm skipping ahead, the thing about Derek that makes him a good DJ, he's technically a good DJ, yes, but Derek is a great party DJ. Not every DJ is a good party DJ.
Because you got to know how to read the mood of the crowd.
You got to read the mood of the crowd. You don't necessarily, you can't necessarily be a crate digger, right? Like, you can pull out some classics, but they have to be accessible classics. They have to be classics so that if you throw them in the mix, even if people don't know the song, you don't fuck up their groove.
Exactly.
And Derek is great at that. He's great. Like, I don't think he touched a current hit the whole time.
Not Saturday. He definitely didn't touch anything Saturday.
I don't think at all he has. Didn't touch a current hit the whole, like, you don't have to play the hottest, newest, latest. That's not his lane.
Yeah.
He didn't touch a current hit the whole time, but he kept everybody just in a really great groove.
Yeah.
And like, even if you didn't know the song, it's a song that makes you want to be like, well, what is that? Mm-hmm. So you can find it, not what is that? So you know?
Yeah. And he also did a great thing of like, as people started joining, like Nile Rodgers jumped in, you know, I just kind of talked about, he would play like, Upside Down, you know what I'm saying? Like, so he would, but it fit in. It wasn't like weird.
Yeah. So as somebody who's now learning how to DJ, like, so first I was in there from the point of view of like, so going back to Saturday. Saturday kept growing. It was crazy when we hit 30. It was crazy when he hit 50. But like by, what was it, like 11 o'clock at night?
Yeah.
10 o'clock at night, it hit 100,000.
Yeah. So yeah, that was bonkers.
That was bonkers, and like Michelle Obama popped in, Oprah popped in, Gail popped in. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar popped in.
Quincy Jones.
Popped in.
Lenny Kravitz.
Stevie, somebody on Stevie's behalf popped in. Exactly. As soon as Stevie popped in, I was like, Quincy's coming.
Yeah.
Quincy came. And then
Patti LaBelle.
And then like the Biden and Sanders campaigns came in, which was whack.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was, and then officially, then Mark Zuckerberg himself came in to walk the floor as
a to check it out. Yeah.
So it hit 100,000, and I was so, I started it at, obviously, as like you said, a New York party person, an industry person, and Derek's friend, like in there to party.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was watching as like a novice DJ, like watching how he was transitioning, how he was reacting, like being able to read a digital room.
Yeah.
Is crazy. But it got to the point where like Derek would do a hat switch and everybody would quote unquote take a drink, meaning post drink emojis. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it was, and as people would come in the same way as you do with a DJ, like I see you such
exactly. Yo, we over here by the bar, come through yeah, with all that. Yeah.
Okay, I see you, blah, blah, blah. Oh, we got such and such in the building. Like it really felt.
And Derek's doing shout outs all the time as well.
Yeah, that's what like I'm saying.
Oh, I thought you meant the comments.
And then people are also interacting with each other. And I was telling somebody, like, I said, it's hard to explain, but the energy really felt like walking through a real party.
It did.
People like, oh, shit, hey. Because I remember, like, Jessica popped up. And I was like, oh, shit, Jessica. What's up? You know, walking through and seeing, it was that kind of energy. It felt like you were really partying with these people. And so, like, for example, somebody posted, I missed it when it happened, because once it got over several tens of thousands, it was easy to miss comments and things with so many people. But, like, at one point, Jay Electronica came in. Erykah Badu was like, okay, I'm leaving my baby daddy. You know, that type of
thing. I didn't see that. That's right. Funny.
So it's like, but people were real. Jim Jones was like,
I saw Jimmy's shit. Yeah.
He, and then like, Instagram Live resets every hour. So people were like, oh, the fire marshal's hating.
Yeah.
Who bumped the DJ table? So it was really great energy. And, you know, as the night kept going on, especially once Michelle Obama and Oprah popped in, outlets started writing about it.
Yeah,
you know,
Gayle King too.
And Gayle King and Alice started writing about it. He was trending on Twitter, even though the shit was on Instagram. People were tweeting about it.
Yeah.
And it was just such a great feeling and such great energy. I mean, the thing that's tricky now is it became so big. It's a lot of pressure, right? Like,
People are like watching, like, what's going to play?
Yeah, he with 150. And now I feel like it's more like part of it's about curiosity. But for those of us who fuck with him and love him and know who a DJ is, like, we'll still pop in and out because we want that energy. Like, Sunday, he did an amazing Soul Classic set. Like, it was fantastic.
Yeah.
But as the night went on Saturday, I started looking at it as a marketer because, like, there have been a lot of DJs doing live sets from the beginning. A lot more are doing them now, obviously.
Yeah, a lot of
because
people.
Because DJs want to spin, right? Like, it's what they do. They still want to do it. They still want to spin for people, spin for the crowd, do whatever. But where Derek really kind of got over is that he branded the joint from the beginning, so it made it really easy for people to promote it and talk about it. And of course he is like a well-known quote-unquote celebrity DJ, and he has a lot of friends in the industry, and he's been doing this for a million years, so there's going to be rappers in there, be executives in there, celebrities in there, so it had the potential to grow. But I don't think, like, he passed it off to Quest on Sunday, and Quest was doing like some crate digging shit.
Oh, that didn't work.
And it's like Quest knows as many people as D Nice knows, but the energy is
just not the same.
The same.
What'd you think, bro?
You're muted, bro.
Sorry.
You
know, we all know him. So there's a special, you know, for us and for me particularly, there was a special kind of feeling to, you know, just sort of see that energy and to see that kind of, you know, seeing his transitions. You know, to this point, but I kind of, you know, I saw a couple people go back and forth about it, and I wanted to kind of say, man, like he's not new to this, bro. Like all those people you've seen in there, like he's spun. Michelle Obama knows who D Nice is. Like, that's not her trying to look down. You know, open them. Like, he knows them, and he knows them because he's been around for a very long time. And and he's good. Like, that's the other part.
Yeah.
Like, it would be easy to say, yo, you know, like you said, Quest knows all those people, but nobody's calling him for that.
No.
You know, you want somebody to curate, you know, a Sound of Philadelphia set, a Gambling Huff, you know, thing. Yeah, we're going to call Quest for that. But to get
even
the party.
With that,
I'm just saying, yeah, to get the party started,
you need a D-Nice or a Cassidy or some of that. Because the problem with it, because Primo was doing, Premier was doing some sets too. And I'm like, but that's the thing. There's a niche for a bunch of different DJs. Like, there's a DJ Collie Park, who used to be DJ Smurf. He's doing booty shaking sets right now.
Yeah.
Sometimes you
want to.
That's my guy, Mike. Yeah.
I've been Biz has been going live. Yeah. Biz has been doing a lot of old school, the blends. You know what I'm saying? The shit we used to get with the Ron G's and all of that other world.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's a different vibe, and it's a different vibe, and it's a different energy. And so I thought it was dope. I thought the special thing about it, particularly, was that it was organic. Like,
yes,
he just decided he was going to do it, and it grew to that point. And, you know, like you said, the first night, you know, it's a couple hundred people. The next night, it was something like maybe like 15,000 or something like that, you know, 10,000. And then the next night, it was like fucking 40,000. And then it was 100. And it was like, whoa. You know,
it wasn't like he was promoting it or nothing like that.
It
was totally organic. People just telling people like, "Yo, go on to D-Nice's live set." Like, I did that with Missy.
And no one is doing anything for 6 hours that they don't love.
Nobody.
You know saying you've got to love that shit, man.
But that's the other thing. You can tell. So, like, some DJs are DJing for heads. Some DJs are on some, like, I want to teach you something, which is, I hate those kind of DJs. Like, Nick, I'm not here to learn shit from the party. And the thing about, like, even with Quest, I dipped into a set for a second, and Quest had a higher level of energy than I'm used to him having, but it still wasn't the same. And he was doing, like, what they call it, Brandy dance hall type of shit, with, like, low dub, whatever, which I was like, whatever. But, or Sherry, whatever the fuck, Sherry, Brandy, whatever they call it. But with Derek, you can tell he's having a good time. That makes a difference.
Yes, he was having a blast Saturday night.
Enjoying it.
But had he planned that, and this is what I was saying.
Nah, you can't plan that.
You can't plan it. And a bunch of motherfuckers about to try to. You simply cannot. Like, you cannot replicate that on purpose. That was organic. But what I love about it is that when all of this is over